Aggressive, dominant, excellent, adult onset, prenatal, infertility, pediatrics, cancer, cardiac, neuro. Welcome to Gene Therapy with Nick Charles.
Hi everyone, Gene Therapy is back after quite a hiatus, and I do want to explain a little bit about that. But before I do, even though we might not see as much about it in the media lately, I do just want to say one thing. The Black Lives Matter movement is still very important. Black Lives Matter and Gene Therapy stands in solidarity with the Black Lives Matter movement. And while we may not be seeing, you know, the news stories about, you know, all of the large protests and how many people showed up that much anymore, protests are still happening. Protests still need to be happening because, you know, it's quite inspiring to see a story about one of these protests, but they don't stop until we actually see change. And we finally are. And, you know, ultimately this time around, we're not losing steam. And here at Gene Therapy, you know, me being a genetics professional, one of the things that I celebrate every day is diversity. And regardless of where we're from, who we are, down to a molecular level, we are still all the same. And that's actually not just like some rigmarole, it's actually biologically true. Every person deserves respect, regardless of where they're from and what their skin color is, what their sexual orientation is, and any minority group is no lesser than anybody else, regardless of what the minority group is. So I really just wanted to emphasize that here at Gene Therapy, we celebrate diversity. We also celebrate everyone having equal opportunities to live their lives and live them well. And that's ultimately what needs to be established and put into play now, especially in the United States. But I don't think the world at large would really hurt from re-examining laws and views on how we treat anyone that looks a little bit different than the quote-unquote larger mass, if you will. So Black Lives Matter and Gene Therapy stands in solidarity with the Black Lives Matter movement. That being said, we are back. Gene Therapy has not gone anywhere. It will not be going anywhere. But, you know, over the last, what has it been? Has it even been a few months? I'm not even really sure at this point, but it's been a while. There's been no new episodes. And, you know, I have been dealing with some personal issues, some family issues. And at this point, I'm finally ready to come back. You know, the coronavirus pandemic was another confounding factor on top of everything else going on. It makes living life a little bit harder in general. But I think I've kind of evened everything out that I've needed to. And the good news is that Gene Therapy is back. Gene Therapy will continue to be around. And I do just have to say overall that even in my absence, the four episodes that are out have gotten a lot of listens and an overwhelming amount of positive review and feedback from people on Instagram, or, you know, people that I work with saying that they like the show, things like that. And I really just want to say thank you to everyone. And you are the reason that I want to continue making educational content surrounding what I do for a living. So here we are. In other good news, my husband Arthur and I just got a new dog, and she has certainly livened up the house. She is a little youngin. She kind of looks like a little fox. She's very beautiful, and we're excited to have her. But if you do hear any yipping, barking, what sounds like a dog shaking themselves out in the background, that's exactly what it is. Because we're all stuck together in the house right now because COVID is still happening. But anyway, this particular episode was recorded a while ago. The episode that I am featured on for this person's podcast has been out for a little bit. I don't know if anyone has listened to it yet, but I am talking about the DNA Today podcast and its host, Kira, who is also now a full-fledged genetic counselor. At the time when we recorded our two episodes, she had just graduated from the Sarah Lawrence College graduate program in human genetics, and she was anticipating starting her new job. And, you know, we talk a little bit about that and what boards are going to look like. And at this point, there still really isn't much of an update on that to my knowledge. So I don't believe we're saying anything out of turn, even with this recording being a little bit dated. But anyway, it was such a great time talking with Kira, both recording on the microphones and a little bit off the microphones, just chatting about life and genetic counseling as well. And I very much look forward to collaborating with her in the future. She is such a professional. She is so nice. And on this episode of Gene Therapy, we are getting her opinions and advice on social media and how to use it to engage with the genetic counseling career, as well as to ultimately, you know, kind of using it as a springboard, if you will, for her career and how that worked for her. But we'll definitely get into some good information about how social media can be used to get genetics information through the mouths of genetic counselors, but through avenues like Twitter or other social media platforms. So without further ado, this is episode 5 of Gene Therapy. And once you are done listening to this, I would highly encourage you to jump on over to Kira's podcast, DNA Today, and don't only listen to the episode that I guested on, but all the other episodes she has as well, because she talks to so many genetics professionals about a plethora of topics, and there is a wealth of knowledge there for everyone to learn. So please enjoy, and talk to you later. Bye-bye. Hi, everyone. Long time, no listen, I suppose. This is Nick Charles, your host of Gene Therapy with Nick Charles. So this is our 5th official episode. And I didn't want to do anything too heavy or long in these trying times, as I said before. So all of the boxes lined up, if you will, and we actually have a guest who hosts her own genetics podcast, DNA Today. And with us, we have the host of DNA Today, Kira Dineen. Hi, Kira.
Hello.
Yeah. So you are like over 100 episodes in, you know, you're the professional here. But it's really great to be able to talk to someone who has such a specific podcast as well. You know, people might recognize my voice from the other podcasts that I've done for a pretty long time with my childhood best friend, Ashley, Copulators Die First, which is a horror movie podcast. So
I'll have to check that one out.
But very much not the same thing. But I will say that I've been getting a lot of positive feedback about this podcast. So I'm glad that the community is small enough that we can connect so quickly and get things on the books. So anyway, Kira is actually a very recent graduate of the same master's program that I went to at Sarah Lawrence. So congratulations.
Yes, thank you. You're one of the first people to say that. I'm a brand new graduate now.
Yeah, that's right. You're like a real genetic counselor now.
So. Yeah, it's still sinking in. I think there will be different points of, you know, eventually hopefully passing boards, you know, six right. months into a job, you know, there's levels to becoming a genetic counselor, I suppose.
Yes. Have they said anything about boards? Like, are they going to change the way they're doing them this year or anything like that?
The last I've heard is that boards are still on for those that want to take them in August. I don't know if there will be a point where they say, okay, now we're canceling them.
And hopefully August is far enough away that we have this figured out a little bit better. All I know is I have a very vivid memory of hating studying specifically metabolic diseases. Metabolic diseases have never been my thing. They never will be my thing. But I was like, I need to know all of the details about all of the things. And then I sat down for boards and there was like one metabolic question.
Oh, don't tell me that, because I also don't want to study metabolic conditions. One of my friends that's going into peds, I'll probably end up relying on her to answer my questions about that. But yeah, metabolic is also not my thing either.
Yeah, you either get it or you don't. And biochemistry and, you know, molecular, all that stuff was like never my forte. But no, you definitely have to study them, because the test changes from year to year. You never know. But I remember there being a lot of Fragile X questions on my version of the test. And I remember talking to a couple of classmates after we all took it. And there was a lot of questions specifically about nomenclature of the different repeat lengths. And I think it was right around the time where they were trying to like fade out the gray zone name and start using intermediate more. And I remember I wrote the ABGC board to fight over a question because I felt like the answer wasn't clear. And yeah, I was that kid.
Well, we need that in order to make the questions better and give that feedback. So you're contributing to the community, I think, in the career.
Well, yeah. Then okay, good. I'll think
about
that.
We'll spin it that way. Yeah.
Yeah. But like also like in general, like the test needs to get a little bit better, but that's a whole different subject.
That's a future episode of yours, it sounds like, the boards.
I guess so. I mean, yes, that would actually be a really great episode. So I will write that down. Today we will be talking about social media and genetic counseling, and essentially how to use genetic counseling, social media to engage with the career, and also how to use it to not only find information out about genetic counseling, but even use it to, you know, kind of help create your career path. And Kira specifically has a story that kind of plays this out a little bit, because prior to genetic counseling school, you worked specifically in, was it some type of marketing for a genetics company or, you know, a genetics service?
Yeah. So I started out kind of halfway through my undergrad working for My Gene Counsel, which was founded by Ellen Matloff. She's known for being part of the Supreme Court case for gene patents. She started this company. And so I joined, let's see what year that was, around 2014-ish, 2015 maybe. And started working as an intern there, but it's an online genetic counseling company, and kind of saw that as an opportunity to start in the field before being in grad school.
Yeah. So, I mean, kind of the same idea as my previous guest, Casey Marks, but, you know, Casey worked with me as an intern
and in many other capacities at Recombine before Recombine became a part of Cooper Surgical, which is a story that we'll leave for another day in terms of really answering what I do and all the things. But anyway, so how did you first really find genetic counseling? Because as I was talking about before we started recording, you know, social media really wasn't a thing when I was an undergrad as it is now, you know, for the last 5 to 10 years, if you will. So it was really something you had to dig for a lot of the times. But was it something that was kind of always on your mind, or did you find it and then you said, this is for me?
Yeah. So growing up, my mom's a social worker, so I was very exposed to that counseling process and just learning from her sharing things in her career. And at first I was like, oh, okay, I'll go into that. My mom loves her career. And I was like, that sounds great. And then as many people in genetic counseling got to the genetics unit in high school and was like, oh, this stuff is really cool. And so once I was learning more about genetics, I had like heard about genetic counseling and thought, well, this is a really good merge of the two, counseling part and the genetics part, genetic counseling. For me to be able to explore that a little further, that's when I started the podcast, to be able to explore genetic topics and careers related to genetics with the idea that I might go into genetic counseling, and ended up going to Sarah Lawrence open house day of learning about genetic counseling. I think back then it was called Career Day. And I was still in high school at the time, but just really being interested in meeting with different genetic counselors in different specialties. There was breakouts, and thinking, wow, I'd really love to go into this career and maybe someday to go to Sarah Lawrence, which fast forward, now I've graduated from the program, which is kind of crazy to think about. Through this show, I really learned that I loved the educational and teaching part of genetics. And I think that's something that a lot of people don't talk about as much when they're talking about why they were drawn to genetic counseling, and that being an aspect that I think is really interesting, because you're doing the counseling part, but a lot of what we do as clinical genetic counselors is being able to educate the person sitting across from you about their own genetics and their own situation, and adapting that to their own education level or situation or who they're with or what information they had before coming and sitting in your office. And I think that's so far my favorite part of genetic counseling, is that educational part and being able to really personalize it, and learning how to do that through the show, I think has helped a lot in how to be a genetic counselor and be explaining really tough concepts and bringing it down to, say, a fourth grade reading level or different areas to meet the patient where they're at.
Yeah, no, definitely. I a very unique, you know, path that you had. And it's like, I would have in high school, my first real big concern was like, what am I wearing today? What is for lunch? Like, I would have never thought of actually like trying to dive into something that I was interested in. But I think same thing for me, you know, you have all your science classes, and I remember thinking, oh, the genetic stuff is really interesting. I might want to put a bookmark in that. But it's really like, you basically created your own genetics education in a way through the podcast, which is so cool. You know, how have you seen, you know, you being able to kind of translate your genetic counseling skills into how, you know, say you market the podcast or, you know, social media posts, things like that? Has that changed at all?
Just having a background of having to think on my feet during shows, even right now, of when a patient asks you a question, you may not be expecting that question. Oftentimes when we do case prep, we're like, okay, they'll ask about inheritance pattern. They'll ask about like, oh, will my kids be affected along those lines? They'll ask all these questions and you think about it, and then you're sitting there and so far only have student experience of having a supervisor with me, to be clear. Then suddenly a patient asks you a question and you're like, I did not prep that answer. I have, you know, I don't know. Earlier, before we started recording, we were saying that genetic counselors get very used to saying, I don't know. Mm. And that being something that can be humbling, of like, you don't know, and saying that to the patient, but also being able to think on your feet and say, okay, well, what information do I know and how can I share that and apply that to their situation? And I think that's such a skill that is really hard to learn unless you're just doing it. I think being able to dive in that way and know exactly if you're reaching someone and, okay, I'm going over their head. How can I bring this down to a level? And I think that's one of the hardest skills as a genetic counselor, of being able to explain things where the patient's really getting it, where it's not going over their head. And I've had so many situations as a student where I'm explaining something, I'm explaining mosaicism or something that's a harder concept to teach to a patient, and you're like, okay, that didn't work. All right, do I use an analogy? Do I try to draw it out with them? Do I try to have them say what they get so far? And so reaching to different ways of teaching, I think through the show has made going into genetic counseling a little bit easier, of like transferring some of those skills over.
Oh yeah, no, I'm sure. I mean, I think that those are things that I wish I had even going into school back in the day, because in my personal life, I think I very easily get frustrated when I see somebody's not getting what I'm saying. And obviously the reaction has to be different when you're sitting with a patient than if I'm talking to my husband or something. But, you know, just even having, you know, the skills to be able to like flip something and look at it from this angle or explain it on this level or this angle on the fly. I mean, obviously it's very useful in counseling, but you know, even just, you know, like with a social media post, if you will, you know, looking at, oh, well, maybe this one didn't get as much engagement as that one. And, you know, what did I do differently and all that stuff. But, you know, specifically with talking about social media, how would you say, you know, your career, other than the podcast specifically, has been influenced by your experience with social media, or, you know, even vice versa? How is being involved long term in social media for the podcast even influenced how you, I don't want to say counsel, but just like, you know, figured out your groove as a counselor?
I think social media has allowed me to learn so much more outside of the clinical rotations I've had and in the classroom. It's really, I kind of think of it as like the third component to me growing in my career and my education, because you have so much more exposure through other genetic counselors. Twitter is, in my opinion, the best place on social media for genetic counseling, because there is a hashtag GC chat where genetic counselors are sharing so much of their information, their experiences, their struggles, what they're processing, asking other genetic counselors questions, and being able to read their tweets and their conversations passively or being active part of that conversation has been so great to just learn a little bit more and widen my scope of saying, wow, I didn't think about this concept in prenatal, or, oh, this is something that comes up for genetic counselors and they don't know how to deal with this. Maybe I can learn and see what people are responding to, so that before I have this issue, I've already identified it's going to be an issue in my career or a hurdle I'm going to have to overcome, and learn from them through that. And just so many conversations on there, I think, are so great to be really absorbing that knowledge that people are putting out there, and expanding from that, what people are posting about in terms of genetic news and what is really relevant to genetic counseling, because genetics as a field is very overwhelming. And there's a lot of areas that may not be relevant to genetic counseling, but hearing what is relevant to genetic counseling and what news to focus on and say, oh, this company bought this one out, how will that affect the testing that's available, or something along those lines. And hearing the controversies and issues and all of these things, there's so much to learn from, and understanding who are prominent genetic counselors in the community and being able to hear from them and who's a trailblazer and what issues are they starting to pick up on and saying, we have to focus on this area. So I think I'm talking a lot of general concepts here, but that being a place where I started on social media and was able to grow from there.
Yeah, no, I mean, in general, you know, I think that the audience that listens to my podcast specifically, what I've promised them is a look at genetic counseling from the inside to really demystify, you know, like what it is that we do. But then also just, you know, for them to be able to come here to learn something new, if it's something they're interested in, if it is someone who's thinking of getting to the genetic counseling career, or a patient who's looking to find information somewhere. You know, I always talk about going to the NSGC website to find a counselor in your area, but, you know, more accessible than that even would be something like going onto Twitter and knowing to look for, you know, the hashtag GC chat. So you heard it here first, because I'm a grandpa and I didn't know about that at all. So hashtag GC chat.
That is the first, you know, place to go. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. And you know, the other thing I would say is that I imagine, obviously, as things become more overwhelming in volume, you know, there's probably been a lot more visibility and then conversation around genetic counseling with the boom of direct-to-consumer testing. You know, I do know a few counselors that work at companies like 23andMe or things like that. But really, you know, what's more important than the counseling of patients at companies like that is just how the company is far more visible to a lot more people than other very specific genetic testing laboratories, and how they have to be responsible with that platform. So, you know, things like direct-to-consumer testing, I'm sure, has been like a huge topic across the board, right?
Yeah, I think that's one of the topics that lay people, of people that aren't in genetics, are most mm-hmm. interested at. I think you can attest it when you're at a family party or a non-genetic gathering. A lot of once you say you're a genetic counselor, people just hear the genetic part and they're like, oh yeah, should I get the 23andMe test, or should I do the ancestry and find out more about my background? And so I think we get asked those questions a lot, and there's a really growing need to be able to answer those questions. And for the genetic counseling community, a lot of that falls on us to be mm-hmm. able to do that. And I think doing it through social media is a great way. I've had a lot of episodes about direct consumer and many more to come. And yeah, a lot of people are asking questions about this. And I think as I'm part of NSGC Digital Ambassadors. And so that's a group that NSGC has selected people that are really active on social media for genetic counseling and spreading awareness. And so we do a annual tweet chat, and that's often a lot of the questions that we're focused on is direct consumer, so that we can answer those questions that people have and shed light on it, because there are so many nuances to it. And then also things that are obvious to you and me that may not be obvious to other people that aren't in the field. So I think that's an area that we need more information on to the public, and doing our part in using online media and social media to be able to get those messages out there so that people are seeing it much more than they are now.
Yeah. So I guess ultimately what you're saying is I have to stop being, I don't want to say lazy. That's a very harsh word to use for myself, but like, this whole lockdown thing has really just like put a lot of things on the back burner for me. And I haven't been as active with my podcast and things like that. So basically what you're saying is I should get on it and start doing more episodes explaining actual concepts like I wanted to originally.
All in due time. You've started the podcast. That's step one.
That was really the big thing. And I know that I have a lot of colleagues that like have very specific exposure and, you know, specialization in one specific topic, like hemoglobinopathies or cardiac things, and I'm very excited to have them on to talk about all the things that I don't really understand. So definitely more to come. But I mean, it's so interesting to think about how, you know, to me, you know, social media is not really a tool that I don't view it as a way to necessarily have quote unquote real conversations with people that I might not actually know. Like for me, it's a way to post pictures as memories or, you know, what have you. But it's so interesting to really like think about it from the perspective of you can reach so many people and you can actually make sure that the information that they may be seeking is accurate and useful. And I had no idea that there was any of this stuff through NSGC or even you just, you know, like genetic counseling hashtags, you know, in starting the podcast and starting the Twitter and the Instagram for it, you know, I was trying to find popular hashtags to put on my posts so that they were seen by more people. And obviously I understood that in doing that, I was potentially opening myself up for questions from people, which is totally fine because that's the whole point of this podcast to begin with. But, you know, I wasn't thinking about it from the perspective of using it as almost an educational tool, you know, kind of like an extension of your office or your genetic counseling flip book to actually be able to engage with people on, you know, a level where they're actually ingesting information from you. I feel like that's both, you know, a cautious tale to think about, but also like exciting because, you know, I think a lot of people may not necessarily think of it as a tool like that, or even think to go to social media as a place to find what they're looking for right off the bat. Like they'll probably like, or at least just me, at least like I'll go to Google and like Google what I'm looking for. But I never really thought about the aspect of like, you can find very specific things on different places if you're, you know, seeking them out. So that's definitely cool. And I don't know, I mean, any other pieces of, you know, good advice from your experience or any, you know, tales that you feel like you would like to share in terms of social media and genetic counseling?
Yeah. So I think one of the really helpful things that I did early on that I mentioned, I started interning for my gene council. And so that was a way to increase my social media engagement outside of my own podcast and really be active within the genetic counseling community online. And a lot of there's so many more genetic counseling companies popping up, whether they are private practices or they're a company that's offering some kind of genetic counseling product or service like related to it. And I think for people that are just joining the field or prospective applicants and having that perspective of reaching out to genetic counseling organizations and companies and see if they could use your help, either, you know, volunteering intern or sometimes there's paid internships. And even if they're not posting that they have one, most companies always need an extra set of hands. And so I think being able to reach out to those can be really advantageous because you can learn what they're doing and the genetic concepts that are related to their business, but also being introduced to so many more people in the field. I think being able to network and you start learning, oh, this is my person I can ask about these sort of questions. And, you know, you were talking about hemoglobinopathies before, of like, you start learning who your people are within your network and being able to start your career even before it starts in a way. I think it's great. We have a couple, our team is growing at DNA Today. And I think it's great for people that are wanting to apply to schools and saying, okay, how can I get more experience to be able to get into school? It's becoming increasingly harder and harder. My year, it's like a 31% match rate, which, you know, it isn't super low, but it's not super high either. So being able to work on applications and say, okay, how can I make my application stand out? Probably one of the most common questions I get from people of like, okay, what should I do to get into school? And I think just being able to start in the field is really advantageous in growing that network of, I mentioned starting a Twitter account, a professional account, often to separate from your personal, being able to start those connections. And once you're working and you're an intern or whatever your title is, you're just exposed to so much to say, oh, I don't know much about this. Now I know to look it up. Whereas when you're not in an active role, it's kind of hard to say, where do I start learning about genetic counseling? It's kind of a hard area to start in. So I think just being able to jump into internships can be a really great way to start doing that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So a lot of the questions that I still get, you know, even after the first couple of episodes is, I think I'm interested in this. How do I get more information? How do I get exposure? Well, you know, you heard a little bit of that from our previous guest, Casey Marks, but, you know, listen up, people. This was also very sound and good advice from Kira. So, chew it over, think about it. And again, like it completely astounds me because I was never that much of a go-getter. So good for you.
Got to start somewhere, right? Yeah.
Yeah. No, but I think that's really sound advice, especially like right now in this specific climate, like you can't really go anywhere. You can't really do much, but you know, you have your phone, you have your computer. And if it's something that you are kind of going back and forth about, maybe just do it, you know, and see what happens. But definitely, I think that a repeat thing that we're hearing thus far is that if you're interested in the career of genetic counseling and you feel like you want to dip your toes in the pool, you know, really the first thing you got to do is not necessarily get your foot in the door, but just start to get exposure from any avenue that you can. That's great.
I think that's a good point. And just that oftentimes when we're getting exposure, if say you're watching a webinar or you're scanning through a new research paper and you're not going to totally get everything in it unless you have a PhD in genetics, maybe, or that's your specific specialty, then you're like, yeah, I know this area of genetics, but no one knows all of genetics. That just doesn't exist. But I think being able to expose yourself to things, and even if you're going, you know, eventually when we do have conferences in person, going to it and seeing how much you absorb. And a lot of it's going to fly over your head, but at least you start getting exposed to those overarching concepts. And that once you do go into, if you end up pursuing genetic counseling, of once you're sitting in the classroom in grad school, once you've been exposed to a lot, other things will kind of fall into place of like, oh, I did hear about this before. And you start connecting the dots in different areas. So it's, you know, I had a lot of advice from genetic counselors as I was starting out, saying, yeah, just read as much as you can, you know, whether it be a really cool genetic book or research article or webinars and conferences, and just upping exposure. And I think with online media is a great way of doing that, because there are so many different ways to do it and pretty much all of them are free, which I think is can be a hurdle for some people.
Yes, there's a good amount of, especially webinars, free educational webinars through genetic companies, through even the NSGC sometimes, you know, but just if you seek it out, it is there. And I think that's really good, sound advice. And again, you know, congratulations that you're a new graduate.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Hopefully you can start your career, in person soon enough, because, you know, probably not tomorrow, but hopefully in the next couple months. But I think that is really that. So it's been great talking to you. I'm very excited that we were able to get in touch and commiserate about genetic counseling, but also podcasts and all the things. But ladies and gentlemen, the podcast is DNA Today. Go look for it if you don't know about it already. If you found me, I'm sure you're going to find plenty of stuff in Kira's podcast that you're going to be interested in and want to listen to. And Kira, where can everybody find you on the internet?
So the website is dnapodcast.com, and Twitter and Facebook are also at DNA Podcast. Instagram is a little different, at DNA Radio. And really the easiest way is if whatever podcast player you have, Spotify, Apple, you can just search DNA Today and I pop right up. And for those that want to hear Nick on my show, you can listen to that episode where we dive into controversies and ethics in fertility.
Yes, you're just, it's a lot of me talking about things that, I give long-winded answers to, as usual, as you folks know that I love to do. Again, great talking to you. Good luck with your new starting career. And I hope we get to talk again soon.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you so much for having me on the show, Nick. It's exciting to have our genetics podcast community growing and that we're all kind of connected in different ways. So it's great to see that we're all contributing to producing educational content for in online media and for people to learn about.
Yes, yes. And there's certainly a couple other podcasts out there that I hope to work with soon. Specifically about like case studies and things like that. So we'll see how that works out. But, you know, as usual, you know where to find me. I'm on Instagram and Twitter at Gene Therapy Pod. And either than that, if you have any questions that you want covered, just let me know, slide into my DMs, or you can email me at genetherapypodcast@gmail.com. And I promise I will be back sooner than I was before with a new episode.
This has been Gene Therapy with Nick Charles. Please note that while I am a medical professional, any information discussed in this podcast does not constitute actionable medical advice. If you feel genetic counseling is appropriate for you, visit nsgc.org to find a genetic counselor practicing in your area. And don't forget to comment, rate, and subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen. Bye for now.